Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, whatever, lady. Oh, that was Hecuba, the British lady. I don't know what her name is. We'll call her Hecuba tonight. I think she was Bridget last night. But welcome. One, welcome all to Eerie House Radio. And tonight, I've been moved, literally moved, to talk about Malin Nurmi, Vampira. And the reason being, for the very first time last weekend, I got to watch the documentary Vampira and Me. And I learned some things about Mila and Vampira that I had not previously known. So I thought I would share some of the things I learned as I started doing more and more research and just kind of celebrate the first television horror hostess, first television horror host for that matter, Vampira, and a very, very iconic figure now. If you're into the genre in any measure, you just know who she is. Who she is. Pardon the hiccup. One should not consume 47 alcoholic beverages before going on radio, but I digress. It's just me tonight, along with an unimaginatively named fat gray kitten, Miss Gray. And we are here ready to go to talk about a vampire. Now, she was born December 11, 1922. A Finnish-American actress who reputedly is the niece of a Finnish athlete named Paavo Nurmi, who was setting all kinds of long-distance running world records the year before she was born. So she moved to the United States, and get this, she was 2 years old when she came to Ashtabula, Ohio. Now, Ashtabula is just a little bit east of Cleveland, where headquarters for Eerie House is located. And, oh, hiya, Evil Annie. Evil Annie in the chat room, squishing us a hello. Yeah, Ashtabula, and she lived there for quite some time before her family moved to Oregon. Now, interestingly enough, Mila was discovered by Howard Hawks, of all people. You know Howard Hawks, he's the guy who brought us the original 1950s version of The Thing. She was performing in Michael Todd's Grand Guignol Midnight Show called Spook Scandal. So he wanted to kind of groom her into becoming the very next Lauren Bacall. She kind of resembles her a little bit, too. If you are watching, if you are watching, by that I mean you're logged in to the Eerie House Radio page. We have some very nice pictures going by of various stages of Mila's life and career. And real strange lady, a bit of a bohemian, and definitely a hipster, particularly when she created her character. I guess she created it as kind of a spinoff of Charles Adams's comic strip of the Adams Family, and her costume was inspired by a then-unnamed Morticia Adams. I don't believe the Mrs. Adams in the comic strip had a first name reference, if I'm understanding what I'm reading correctly. And or what I have read. So in any event, she definitely didn't want to be a ripoff. She wanted her character to be bustier and sexier than the Morticia of the comic strips. She caught the attention of a television producer who wanted her to host horror movies in L.A. Now, this is back in 1954. In fact, it was a preview was done on April 30th of that year, called Dig Me Later, Vampira. And then the Vampira show itself premiered, seems like the next day, May 1st, 1954. And for the first 4 weeks, the show was at midnight, and then it was moved up to 11 p.m., ostensibly because of its popularity. And even later on, it moved up to 10:30 p.m. Of course, that had to be Pacific time since it was showing in L.A. Now, each show opened with Vampira gliding down a dark hallway, filled with fog, and at the end of her walk towards the camera. It zoomed in on her face, and she lets out this piercing scream. Then she would introduce, and I guess what they now call riffing a movie, she would mock the film. One of the first people to do it successfully, much like Goulardi here in Cleveland did, many years later, really, a good 9 years later. So, Myla had an interesting life. She really didn't reach the success maybe some of us would have liked, other than the Vampire Show, which really didn't last that long. It was only on for a couple of years. On two different television stations. She left one and retained the rights to her character and went to a competing station. She'd made a lot of appearances as Vampira, introducing events locally and so forth. But apparently, you know, her time ran short. Her massive popularity, I mean, she was in many magazines, just really had it going on in the mid-50s. And another interesting fact that I did not know about Myla was that she was good friends with James Dean, of all people. In fact, it was said that James Dean wanted to break up an argument between a director and actress Shelley Winters so he could go watch the Vampire Show on TV. And there's been documented instances of her visiting him on set for different films. she felt that he and her shared the same neuroses and that they were of kindred spirits. Myla Nurmi was a bit ethereal. She believed, I think, in previous lives, and that she had known James Dean for some time. Unfortunately, newspaper columnist Hedda Hopper got a hold of the story and really painted a bad picture of Vampira, that she was perhaps trying to, you know, sponge off of his fame and his unfortunate ending as a youngster, you know, in the famed car accident. In 1955, Myla was the target of an attempted murder. A man forced his way into her apartment and terrorized her for up to 4 hours. She did escape and managed to call the police with assistance from someone. So after that, we really didn't hear much about her, although there was a punk band. What the heck was their name that she got involved with? I know she was with Tomata Duplenty of the Screamers, but I know that she Satan's Cheerleaders. She did a couple songs actually in the late 80s. She was in her 70s at this time, or close to her late 60s rather, and she recorded 2 7-inch singles, one called "I Am Damned" and another one "Genocide Utopia." Just I've heard pieces of them, and if you listen, she remained a bit strange throughout her entire life. But the film Vampira and Me that documents a bit of her life and her, you know, her friendship with the filmmaker, which allowed him to do the interviews with her later in life. She was 80 some years old at the time. But she managed to retain her beauty and her dignity, even though there were times in her life she was so poor that the friends were delivering her food, and I guess there was a period she was living in half of a garage, just scrapping things together. She had jobs as a linoleum layer and other things. But again, I at least in the way she was presented in the film, she never lost her dignity and neither her beauty. One of those people, I think, that in spite of a tough life, she really aged gracefully. And she had no children, although she was married twice. She had no children. She married three times. Her first husband was Dean Reisner. He was a child actor who later was a screenwriter for films like Dirty Harry and played Misty for Me, both with Clint Eastwood, and a lot of other projects and TV episodes. Her second husband was a younger fella, John Brinkley, and married him in 58, and then that didn't last too long. She later married Fabrizio Mioni. Fabrizio! In 1961. I do believe she was single at the time of her death. There was a time when she tried to sue actress Cassandra Peterson for her usage of Vampyra. Felt that the character was very, very much like, too much like Vampyra, and that it was an out-and-out ripoff. Unfortunately, she did not win the suit. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on what you believe, I suppose. Initially, they were going to call the character Vampyra, but found that they couldn't because Myla Nurmi still owned the character. So it was renamed Elvira's Movie Macabre. It did not rule in favor of the court, in favor of Myla. It ruled in favor of Cassandra, and it said that the likeness means the actual representation of another person's appearance and not simply close resemblance. In other words, they didn't think it was a direct ripoff. It wasn't like enough for there to be grounds for a suit, apparently. So unfortunately or unfortunately, didn't work out in Myla's favor. She played other eclectic characters. There's a movie I'm dying to see now. It's called Beat Generation. And she's credited in the film as Vampyra, but does not appear as the character. She's a beatnik poet telling the... It's like early goth, man. She was telling, depressing poems about parents and not understanding and so forth with the clicking of the fingers. Clicking of the fingers, as one would have in a coffee shop in the 50s during the Beat Generation. Sounds like a good film, at least interesting. And I would imagine a B film. Late in her career, she did get to do a few things. Again, she did some work with the punk rock bands. But she got to appear in other films. Many of us are aware, of course, she was in Ed Wood's Plan 9 from Outer Space. That was the same year as the Beat Generation. Apparently, Bela Lugosi was a fan of Vampyra and wanted to work with her. Well, unfortunately, as we know, he passed during the filming of Plan 9 from Outer Space. So based on the information I've gleaned from both the internet and the film, Ed Wood found a Vampyra and offered her $200 to appear as herself with no speaking lines. Basically as the wife of Bela Lugosi's character. She was in another film called The Big Operator. I Passed for White. Okay. She was credited as Vampyra in a 1960 film called Sex Kittens Go to College. Yay. I did not know this, but she's in The Magic Sword as the hag and sorceress. Pretty cool. In the 90s, she did a brief appearance as Vampyra in a horror kung fu theater TV series. She was an honorary cast member. In 1998, she had a quick comical cameo appearance as a woman in a hotel lobby in a movie called I Woke Up Early the Day I Died. And, of course, her likeness and some of the few remaining pieces of television show, they show a great deal of what is available out there in the movie Vampyra and Me. They also dug up and reworked some footage of her appearance on the George Gobel show in the 50s. So again, she was making the circuit, and unfortunately, as I've discussed on the radio show that we do here on Fridays here in Erie House with Dave Binkley, that none of that stuff was saved. It was on Kinescope. They didn't put it on film. It really wasn't until Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz really sort of invented syndication that things from old TV shows were saved. So much like Goulardi, much like Zacherle, much like other early television stars, there's very, very little of Vampira that's available to be seen. So enjoy what you can when you can see it, folks. You can find some of it on YouTube and other places. No callers tonight, no guests tonight, so this is going to be a kind of a quickie show. If you do want to call in, if you happen to be listening and I can't see you, the number here is 646-378-0264. Dial carefully. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, poison doesn't always come in bottles, and it isn't always marked with the skull and crossbones of danger. Poison can take the form of words and phrases and acts, the venom of racial and religious hatred. Here in the United States, perhaps more than ever before, we must learn to recognize the poison of prejudice and to discover the antidote to its dangerous effects. Evidences of racial and religious hatred in our country place a potent weapon in the hands of our enemies, providing them with the ammunition of criticism. Moreover, group hatred menaces the entire fabric of democratic life. As for the antidote, you can fight prejudice, first by recognizing it for what it is, and second by actively accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, and by speaking up against prejudice and for understanding. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
And for you regular listeners wonder why I play that so often, it's because I believe in it. It's great words from Vincent Price. And the other thing I believe in...
Monster,
is,
sex, and rock and roll!
And I think that's what that Vampira is all about. She was sexy, she was different. I think her show, and I don't know, maybe you folks agree with me or not, but I think her show and others like it and the horror host phenomenon became popular as a result of some of the fears that we had in the 50s. We had the Cold War, we had McCarthyism here. People who may know me personally, I lean to the right a little bit, but I'm not. But come on, it's 2017. You know what I mean? It's a different world than it was in the 50s. Many, many people are open to many more things, but because characters like Vampira, like Zacherle, like Goulardi, were so out there and so rebellious, in particular Goulardi and Vampira, it was something for the younger generation to latch onto. I think that led to their insane popularity at the time. They were each of these were wildly popular by their local communities, and I think it was the times that opened the door for these hosts to be, you know, to say something a little different and to have a dark sense of humor about things and a sarcastic sense of humor at times and you know, things that are natural and everyday to some people now. It was new and disturbing, and some people didn't like it. There were many people who people that are my age that grew up with the horror hosts of the 60s and 70s. Many of our parents hated that stuff. They didn't want you watching that stuff. It'll rot your brain. And it did, but no harm done in my case. Not much of a mind to warp. But yet and still, I find people that have common interests that want to hear about people like Myla Nurmi, horror hosting, monster movies, and so forth. You know, you can join us every Friday at 7:30 Eastern doing old-time radio with my co-host, Dave Binkley, from Weirdness Really Bad Movie. It hasn't escaped me that for the 4 years I've been doing radio, four-plus years I've been doing radio right here on this particular website, this blog talk radio thing, I've always been lucky to have a knowledgeable co-host. You know, I've always felt more like a color man bringing a little humor and keeping the show flowing and minding the clock, as it were, when that becomes necessary. I'm really blessed to have Dave Binkley. He knows a lot about these old-time radio shows. Yesterday we showed two. We showed them on radio. No, we broadcast on radio two episodes of X-1. One was called The Light, and the other one was one of my favorites, Volpla. Join us next Friday. I'll be announcing on Facebook pages which episode Dave Binkley and I will be hosting right here on Blog Talk Radio. So, in the words of Braveheart, they may take our streaming channel, but they'll never take our radio. Braveheart. Right here on Erie House. Well, thanks, everyone. I really kind of ran out of things to say about Myla Nurmi here all by myself, other than a person that naturally I would have loved to have met. Did I have a crush on her? Yeah. Do I? Yeah, absolutely. She had an interesting look. A point I didn't bring up was her incredible figure. She reported herself as 38, 17, yes, 17, 36. Now, in addition to some corset wearing, she actually said that the bulk of her waist reduction was done by binding herself a bit with like a rubber, really almost like a rubber tire, inner tube, and sweating it off. She said she was 17 inches when she went on stage, when she was at her thinnest, but over the course of the weekend, you know, she would gain an inch or two back because she wouldn't bind herself as much. She would do that in particular for the 2 days preceding the shooting of her show. But what an incredible, interesting figure. There's, at times, she almost looks like she comes in two pieces, you know. And, in fact, that may have been said to her at one point by a woman who was probably trying not to be too flattering, but I digress. Unfortunately, she passed a day before my birthday in 2008. She was 85 years old, God bless her, and she was in L.A. at the time. Born in Finland, Petsamo, Finland. Not sure where that is, but it's a cold place. But she did have those beautiful high-cheeked Finnish characteristics to her face, I think, and I think that added to her beauty. She was a smart lady, I think, but also a very rigid, and that may have led to the fact, you know, that she wasn't particularly financially successful. I think each of us that love her as a fan would say she was extremely successful because she left behind a legacy that will never really be repeated. There's others who have emulated her, whether accidentally or on purpose. There are people who've styled themselves after her. She's a very iconic lady from the 50s. I think, for me at least, when I think of beautiful women from the 50s, when you get past Jane Russell and Marilyn Monroe, that leaves Myla Nurmi and Betty Page. And it's funny because they discussed in the film, I don't want to ruin too much of it for you, but they kind of discussed the differences between Myla and Betty. Betty was like the nice girl next door who could do naughty things. Vampira was the naughty girl. And a strong character, and maybe that was the other thing, is maybe America was not just yet ready for a strong woman character. She was not to be compromised, and I think she lived her life the same way, escaping from that bad situation that I talked about earlier. She wasn't defeated, you know what I mean? Only Father Time got her in the end, as he does all of us, but again, I think she passed with strength and dignity, and she's very beloved by a lot of people, including myself. So it's a little bit early. I'm grateful for the listeners today, but we're going to cut out of here, and We will see you next Friday for Erie House Radio with some old-time radio shows. So until then, have a great night, and thanks for listening to Erie House Radio. Bye-bye.